Okay, so we've got a ton of information here about long-term care insurance. Looks like you guys have been doing your homework, which is great. And what we want to do today is really try to cut through all the noise.
Exactly. We want to break down the essentials, help you understand how it all actually works, and why it matters to you.
Right. Because we're talking about your future here, and it's something a lot of people don't really want to think about, but it's crucial.
Absolutely. And especially because people are living longer these days.
Yeah.
You know, the average lifespan is now somewhere around 84 years.
84 years. Wow.
So the odds are that at some point, you might need some form of long-term care or support.
And those costs, as I'm sure you know, they can really add up. We're talking potentially tens of thousands of dollars a year, sometimes even hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, that's right. We're talking huge numbers.
So long-term care insurance, at its core, that's designed to help with those kinds of costs, right? If you have a long-term illness or become disabled or maybe face a cognitive issue, something like Alzheimer's.
Exactly. And it often comes down to needing help with what are called activities of daily living, or ADLs.
Right, the ADLs. That's something I've seen come up a lot in the material you sent in.
Yeah. These are really the fundamental things we do every day to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, like bathing, dressing, using the toilet, getting in and out of bed or a chair.
Being able to eat.
Yeah, eating on your own, and then maintaining continence.
So there are six of them, and those are key because if you can't do enough of those on your own, that's what usually triggers your insurance to start paying benefits.
Right on.
So it's also important to make a distinction, I think, between healthcare, like regular healthcare, and long-term care. They're related, but not quite the same.
Good point.
Healthcare is usually about, trying to cure something to make you better, but long-term care, that's about supporting you in your current condition, whatever that may be, and meeting your needs based on that. So let's get into the nuts and bolts here. What exactly does long-term care insurance cover? And what might people be surprised to learn that it doesn't cover?
Good question. It's easy to assume that government programs like Medicare would take care of those long-term care costs.
Right.
But that's not really how it works. Medicare generally only provides very limited coverage for what we call custodial care. And that's the help you need with personal care and supervision. That kind of assistance often makes up the bulk of long-term care cost.
Medicare is really geared more towards those acute short-term health needs.
Right.
Like if you need to stay in a skilled nursing facility after a hospital stay. But even then, there are a lot of
A lot
conditions.
of hoops to jump through.
Yeah. Usually, you have to have been in the hospital for at least 3 days, and then you need to be admitted to a skilled nursing facility that's Medicare certified, and that has to happen within 30 days of your hospital discharge.
That's right.
And on top of all that, even if you meet those conditions, there's a limit. It only covers you for up to 100 days.
Exactly. And it's important to understand how that coverage breaks down. Medicare will cover your skilled nursing facility stay completely for the first 20 days.
Okay.
Then, for days 21 through 100, you have to pay a daily copayment.
Right.
And after that 100-day mark,
Yeah.
the coverage stops. Clearly, it's just gone. You're on your own.
So that's a big gap, potentially.
It can be.
Yeah.
Now, Medicare does cover hospice care, which is care for people with a terminal illness, and they have a prognosis of 6 months or less to live.
Right.
And they do cover some medically necessary home health care. But you need a doctor's order to qualify. And you need a doctor to recertify that it's necessary every 60 days.
Okay.
There's no time limit on that, at least.
So it's not just standard Medicare. A lot of people have Medicare supplement insurance, those Medigap policies.
Right.
And those, I've noticed, they don't usually cover what we're talking about here with long-term care either, do they? Things like custodial care.
No, that's right. You can't count on those Medigap policies for things like custodial care, adult daycare, specialized care for Alzheimer's or assisted living facilities. Those are usually not covered.
Got it. So Medicare and Medicare supplements, they are not going to be the solution for most people when it comes to long-term care.
Right.
Now, I know you mentioned Medicaid. Is that a different story?
Medicaid is a different story. It does cover a much wider range of long-term care services.
Okay.
But there's a catch. Medicaid is really meant to be a safety net for people with very limited income and assets.
It's for people who are really struggling financially.
Exactly. A lot of people who end up needing Medicaid to pay for long-term care have had to spend down their assets over time just to qualify.
So they're essentially depleting their savings.
Yeah. And there's another thing to keep in mind. After someone dies who was receiving Medicaid benefits for long-term care, the state might try to recover those costs from that person's estate.
Wow. Okay. So that's something else to be aware of. So we've got Medicare, which doesn't really cover these long-term care needs, and Medicaid, which does, but you have to essentially be impoverished to qualify. So that's where long-term care insurance comes in. It helps people bridge that gap.
Exactly. Long-term care insurance gives you a way to plan ahead, to be proactive about your future needs.
To take control.
Right. You get to choose what level of benefits you want and what types of care are important to you. You can tailor it to your individual situation.
And you get to protect your assets, protect your savings, and your family's future. You don't have to worry about draining your bank account or leaving your loved ones with a huge financial burden.
That's the key.
Okay, so we know what it generally covers. Now, how does it actually work? When does it kick in? What triggers the benefits to start paying out?
Good question. Remember those activities of daily living, the ADLs that we talked about earlier? Those are central to this.
Right. Bathing, dressing, eating.
Yep. Most policies will require that you're unable to do a certain number of those ADLs without help.
And how many do you usually need to have trouble with?
Generally, it's at least 2 out of those 6.
Okay.
But you always want to check the specific policy you're looking at because sometimes it can vary.
Got it. So it's not just physical limitations, right? I remember seeing in the materials that cognitive impairment can also be a trigger for those benefits.
That's right. So if someone has a decline in their mental abilities, maybe due to Alzheimer's or another type of dementia, to the point where they really need supervision to keep themselves safe and to keep other people safe, that can often activate the policy's benefit.
So it can be a safety issue.
Exactly. And there are standard tests that doctors and social workers use to assess cognitive abilities.
Okay. So once those benefits are triggered, let's talk about the types of care that a long-term care insurance policy might help pay for.
Yeah. So there are basically 3 main levels of care, depending on how much support someone needs.
Okay.
First, we have skilled nursing care. That's the most intensive level. It's given by licensed nurses around the clock, and it's always under a doctor's supervision.
So that's for people who need a lot of medical attention.
Exactly. Then we have intermediate care. This is also provided by licensed nurses following a doctor's orders, but it's not constant care. It's more like intermittent.
Okay, so maybe they need some help, but not 24/7 nursing.
Right. And then the third level is custodial care. That's what we've been talking about with the ADLs.
Yeah.
It's assistance with those everyday tasks. And you don't need to have medical training to provide custodial care.
Right.
It can be done by family members or home health aides.
So those are the levels of care. What about the different settings where you might receive this care?
Yeah, so long-term care policies usually cover a variety of care settings, like home health care. That's where nurses and therapists come to your home to provide skilled medical care.
That's a good option for people who want to stay in their own homes as long as possible.
Exactly. Then there's adult daycare, which provides a supervised environment for adults who need some help during the day. They can get meals, they can participate in activities, and it also gives caregivers a break.
Right, because it can be a really demanding job to care for someone with long-term care needs.
Absolutely. And then there's respite care, which is temporary care to give caregivers a rest.
Mm.
You know, maybe they need to go out of town or just need a break for a few days. Respite care can provide that coverage.
That sounds like a really essential service. And then there are assisted living facilities, right?
Yes. Assisted living facilities provide housing, meals, and help with those activities of daily living. They're for people who need some assistance but can still function relatively independently.
Right.
Some assisted living facilities can provide more extensive levels of care as well.
Okay. So now that we have a good grasp of the types of care and the different settings where that care might be delivered, let's talk about some of the specific features you'd usually find in a long-term care insurance policy.
Okay. That's good.
One that seems really important is the benefit period.
Yes, the benefit period is key.
Mm-hmm.
It refers to how long your policy will pay benefits once you qualify. So how long that financial support will last.
So it's a time limit.
Right. You'll usually see policies with benefit periods starting around 12 months, with options going up to 2, 3, maybe even 5 years.
Okay.
Some policies even have lifetime benefits.
Wow.
But there's usually a cap, a maximal amount that the policy will pay out in total. And as you can imagine, the longer the benefit period you choose, the more expensive the policy will be. You'll have higher premiums.
Makes sense. The longer they could potentially be paying you, the more you have to pay up front.
Exactly.
What about the actual amount of money the policy will pay out, the benefit amount?
Yeah, that's another really important feature. It's usually expressed as a daily dollar amount that you decide on when you buy the policy. A lot of people base this on how much care costs in their area.
Because those costs can vary a lot from place to place.
Oh, yeah. It can be really different depending on where you live. And of course, the higher the daily benefit you choose, the higher your premiums will be.
Right, because you're asking them to cover more.
Right. It's also important to understand the difference between an indemnity policy and a reimbursement policy.
Okay.
An indemnity policy pays you that fixed daily amount no matter how much your actual care costs.
So even if your costs are lower than that daily amount, you still get the full benefit.
Exactly. But with a reimbursement policy, they'll only pay up to your actual expenses or your chosen daily benefit, whichever is less.
Okay, so it depends on your actual costs with a reimbursement policy.
Right. And one more thing to keep in mind, a lot of comprehensive policies cover both facility care and home care. But often the home care benefit is lower. It might be 50% of the facility-based care benefit.
Okay, so you get less coverage for home care. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Now, I know there's also something called an elimination period. Can you explain what that is?
Sure. The elimination period is basically a waiting period. It's the number of days you have to receive long-term care services after you qualify for benefits before the policy actually starts paying. It's sort of like a deductible in other types of insurance.
Okay, so it's like you have to pay out of pocket for a certain amount of time before the coverage kicks in.
Exactly. And you can choose the length of that elimination period. Usually there are options like 30 days, 60 days, 90 days.
Right.
And typically the longer the elimination period you choose, the lower your premiums will be.
Because you're taking on more of the initial cost burden yourself.
Right.
Now, there are also some optional benefits that you can add to your policy, right? Are there any that you think are particularly important for people to consider?
There are a few key ones.
Mm-hmm.
One is guaranteed insurability.
Okay. And what's that?
Guaranteed insurability lets you buy more coverage later on, even if your health has changed. You don't have to go through medical underwriting again.
So you're locking in your ability to increase coverage in the future no matter what.
Exactly. This can be really important because you never know what the future holds. Your health might decline or the costs of care could go way up.
Right. So that gives you some peace of mind.
Exactly. Then there's something called non-forfeiture benefits.
Non-forfeiture. Okay, that one sounds a little complicated.
It basically gives you some protection if you end up letting your policy lapse, meaning if you stop paying the premiums, you might get some of the money back that you paid in.
Oh, so it's like a cash value or a refund of some of your premiums.
Right. But they usually deduct any benefits you already received.
Makes sense.
And then there's inflation protection. This one is really important in my opinion.
Why is that?
Because inflation is a fact of life. And over time, the costs of long-term care are going to keep going up.
Right. Things are only getting more expensive.
Exactly. Inflation protection gives you automatic increases in your benefit amounts every year, so your coverage keeps pace with those rising costs. It's often tied to what's called a cost of living adjustment, or COLA.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. You don't want your benefits to become meaningless over time just because everything has gotten more expensive.
Right. You need your policy to keep up with the times.
So those optional benefits are worth thinking about carefully. Now, something else I've seen in the materials is the distinction between what are called qualified and non-qualified long-term care insurance plans. Can you explain that difference and why should our listeners care about that?
Yeah, so this is mainly about taxes. And it all started with this law called IPA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. It came out back in 1996.
Okay.
And IPA basically set up a bunch of rules for long-term care insurance policies.
It created a standard.
Right. To be considered qualified and get favorable tax treatment, a policy has to follow all these specific rules.
Okay.
So the government is basically saying, hey, if your policy meets these standards, we'll give you some tax breaks.
So what are some of those standards, those requirements to be a qualified plan?
Okay, so there are several. First, a qualified policy usually needs to say that you have to be unable to perform at least two of those six ADLs that we talked about. Or it has to require a certification from a doctor that you have a chronic illness that's expected to last at least 90 days. Or that you have a cognitive impairment that requires substantial supervision. It has to be one of those triggers.
Okay.
Then there's guaranteed renewability. This means the insurance company can't cancel your policy as long as you keep paying the premiums.
So you're guaranteed coverage.
Right. And the policy can only cover long-term care expenses. Mm-hmm. It can't provide benefits for anything that Medicare already covers.
No overlap with Medicare.
Right. And they can't have what's called a cash surrender value.
So you can't just cash it in like some other types of insurance.
Right. And any dividends or premium refunds, those have to be used to either reduce your premiums in the future or to increase your benefits.
Okay.
And finally, to be considered qualified, the policies have to follow certain marketing standards and benefit standards that protect consumers.
Okay, so lots of rules to qualify for those tax benefits.
Right.
So what are those tax benefits? What makes a qualified policy better from a tax perspective?
Okay, so there are a few big ones. If you have an indemnity policy, the benefits you get are generally tax-free, up to a certain limit each day.
So you don't have to pay income tax on that money.
Right. And that daily limit is adjusted for inflation every year.
Okay.
Now, if you have a reimbursement policy, the amount of your actual expenses that gets reimbursed is tax-free.
Okay.
Then, there are benefits for self-employed people. If you're self-employed, you can deduct the premiums you pay for a qualified policy on your taxes, up to certain limits.
So you can lower your taxable income by deducting those premiums.
Right. And those limits are also adjusted for inflation each year.
Okay.
Now, if you're not self-employed, you might still be able to deduct those premiums as part of your itemized medical expenses on your taxes. But there are some income thresholds and limits there.
So there are some restrictions.
Right. And then there's another benefit. If your employer pays the premiums for a qualified policy for you.
Okay.
Those payments are tax deductible for your employer, and you don't have to pay income tax on them.
So qualified policies definitely have some advantages when it comes to taxes.
Yes.
But she said there are still non-qualified policies out there. Why would someone choose a non-qualified policy? What's the trade-off?
The main reason to go with a non-qualified policy is that they don't have to follow all those CPAO rules.
They have more flexibility.
Right. So they can offer different kinds of benefits that might be more appealing to some people.
Okay.
But the big drawback is you don't get those tax breaks. You can't deduct the premiums on your taxes. And the benefits you receive, those might be taxable income.
So it's a trade-off. More flexibility in the policy, but less favorable tax treatment.
Exactly. You have to weigh the pros and cons.
Got it. Okay, now let's move on to another topic that came up in the materials. State long-term care partnership programs. What are those all about?
Okay, so these programs were created to help a specific group of people. People who have too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but who are still really worried about the costs of long-term care.
So people who are kind of in the middle.
Exactly. Middle-class folks, they're often stuck.
Right.
These programs were part of the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005. And basically, they let states create these partnerships between insurance companies, state insurance departments, and Medicaid agencies.
It's a team effort.
Right. They're trying to encourage people to buy private long-term care insurance.
Okay. So how do these partnership programs actually work?
Well, first, you buy a long-term care insurance policy that meets the requirements of your state's partnership program. Then, if you need long-term care, your policy starts paying out benefits. But let's say you need care for a long time, and your policy runs out of benefits. You've used them all up. Now you need to apply for Medicaid.
Right.
Well, with a partnership program, you get special asset protection.
So it's not just about paying for care. It's also about protecting your savings. What kind of asset protection does this program offer?
It's often called a dollar-for-dollar approach.
Yeah.
Basically, for every dollar that your partnership policy pays out in benefits, you're allowed to keep that same amount of your assets, even if you have to go on Medicaid.
Oh, wow.
And that protected amount is also usually exempt from Medicaid estate recovery. So it gets passed on to your heirs.
Okay, so you don't have to worry about the state taking those assets to recover the costs of your care.
Exactly.
So these partnership programs, they really offer a way for people to plan for their future care without risking everything they've worked for.
Right. It's a safety net.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about individual long-term care insurance policies, but I know people can also get coverage through a group.
Right, like through an employer.
Yeah. Can you talk about the pros and cons of individual versus group policies?
Sure. It's pretty similar to other types of insurance. Group coverage through your employer can be cheaper.
Lower premiums.
Right. And sometimes you don't even have to go through medical underwriting to get approved.
Oh, so it's easier to qualify.
Right. But the downside is those group plans aren't really tailored to your specific needs. The employer picks the coverage for everyone. And it might not be as comprehensive as an individual policy that you could customize yourself.
Oh, okay. So it's a trade-off.
Right. Lower cost and easier qualification, but less control over the coverage.
Got it. Now, when someone applies for an individual long-term care insurance policy, what are the insurance companies looking at when they're deciding whether to approve you?
So long-term care underwriting is a little different than regular health insurance underwriting.
Okay.
With health insurance, they're really focused on your medical diagnoses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like heart disease, diabetes, that kind of stuff. But for long-term care insurance, they're mainly looking at your ability to do those activities of daily living.
Those ADLs.
Yeah. They want to know how well you can function in your daily life right now. So, for example, if you have heart disease, but it's well managed and you can still do all your ADLs without help, you're probably going to be considered a good risk. But if you're healthy overall, but you need a cane to walk, you might have trouble getting approved.
Because that indicates a potential problem with your mobility.
Right. So it's really about how well you can function, not just your medical history.
That makes sense. Finally, with all the complexity involved in these policies, what kinds of consumer protections are in place to make sure people aren't taken advantage of?
There are a lot of important protections. The marketing standards are pretty much the same as for Medicare supplement insurance.
Okay.
The insurer has to give you a shopper's guide and a detailed outline of the coverage. They also have to determine if buying the policy is right for your situation, you know, if it's suitable for your needs and your finances. And if you're replacing an existing policy, they have to give you a formal notice regarding replacement.
So there's a lot of transparency.
Right. Plus, there's a 30-day free look period. So after you get the policy, you can look it over. And if you're not happy with it, you can return it and get a full refund.
Oh, that's good. That gives you some time to really think it over.
Right. And the advertising for these policies can't be misleading. It has to be truthful. And they have to tell you right up front on the first page of the policy that it's guaranteed renewable.
So they can't just cancel your coverage later on.
Right. As long as you pay the premiums, you're covered. And the premiums can only increase for a whole class of policyholders.
So they can't just single you out and raise your rates?
Exactly.
What about minimum benefit standards? Are there any rules about what the policies have to cover?
Yeah, there are some key ones. First, as you said, the policies have to be guaranteed renewable. They also have to offer you the option of inflation protection. And there are limits on how strict their definition of a pre-existing condition can be.
Oh.
Basically, it can't be more restrictive than defining a pre-existing condition as something that you got medical advice or treatment for in the 6 months before your policy started.
Okay.
Importantly, they can't require you to have been in the hospital before you can get benefits.
So no prior hospitalization required.
Right. And for group policies, if you leave the group, or if the whole group plan gets terminated, you have to have options to continue your coverage. You can either convert it to an individual policy or find some other way to keep it.
So you don't just lose your coverage.
Right. And then finally, there are safeguards in place to help prevent you from accidentally losing coverage. For example, the insurer might have to send a notice to a third party if you miss a premium payment, just to make sure you're aware.
So it's like a safety net to prevent your policy from lapsing.
Exactly.
Okay, well, this has been a really deep dive into long-term care insurance. We've covered a lot of ground. To recap for our listeners, we've talked about the high costs of long-term care, the limitations of Medicare, and the fact that you practically have to be broke to qualify for Medicaid. Long-term care insurance is really a way for you to protect your future and to plan for those potential expenses without putting your assets at risk.
Right. And we talked about the things that trigger those benefits, like not being able to do those activities of daily living or having a significant cognitive impairment. And we went over all those different levels of care and all the different places where you can receive that care.
At home, in assisted living, and so on.
Right. And we explained those key policy features.
Yeah.
You know, benefit periods, the benefit amounts, the elimination period, and all those optional benefits.
Things like inflation protection and guaranteed insurability.
Yep. And we discussed the difference between those qualified and non-qualified policies and how the qualified ones get you tax benefits. And then we finished up with those state partnership programs and how they offer extra asset protection.
It's been really comprehensive. Hopefully this has given everyone a good foundation to start thinking about their own long-term care planning. So as we wrap up, I want to leave you with something to ponder. As you think about your own future and the fact that we're all living longer, what concrete steps can you take now to ensure your future well-being and financial security when it comes to potential long-term care needs?
It's really worth exploring some resources that are specific to your state and carefully considering how all this information applies to your own unique situation.
This is a great starting point.
It is. Think about it.
Okay, that's all for this deep dive.
Thanks for listening.